Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Yeah, weather's not too bad, is it?
I'm really happy about this weather, honestly. It's real sunshiny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be cold. It's November, so...
Yeah, well, you know, it's going to be warm even later on in the week, and it's Monday. That means Monday with my good friend and co-host Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
How about you? You're doing bright and shiny, at least, if cold.
You know, we got to talk quickly about your and my Green Bay Packers.
I feel like I'm back 35 years in the Packer, you know, back in the 80s and
Scott Hunter
90s. And... Yeah, the quarterbacks we can't remember the names of.
Yeah, you remember Scott Hunter?
Oh, I remember Scott Hunter for sure, yeah.
And so here's where they are, Sandy. They're going to have to do a teardown. And...
Well, you know, I'm not sure they have to do a teardown exactly, but the problem is they've got $50 million invested. They put all their eggs, like I said, I think last week. My grandmother said, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Well, unfortunately, the Packers sort of backed themselves into that corner. And Rodgers, who knows, you know, he's obviously lost some of his edge. He's playing with a whole different cast of characters. He doesn't have someone who can catch any pass that's thrown in his direction like Devontae used to be. I mean, it turns out Devontae was just very good at making the quarterback look good and vice versa. But, you know, the offensive line, I thought, did all right yesterday. He had time to pass.
Yeah, he did.
I just thought the choices he was making, he was so fixated on Lazard. He was fixated on throwing it into the end zone at a time when they could have easily made five-yard chunks, I think, and maybe won the game.
You know, Sandy, they didn't just lose Devontae Adams. They lost Valdez-Scanlon.
Yeah.
They lost a couple other receivers that they had. And they lost their core of receivers who Aaron knew where they were going to be. And they knew Aaron's proclivities. And over the years, they just meshed. They knew, Aaron knew where they were going to be. And now it takes time for them to build that kind of rapport, right? I don't care if it's Aaron Rodgers, whoever it is, Johnny Unitas, whoever it is, you've got to know. The receiver has to know you, and you're kind of, you know what the other guy's going to do. Well, these are new guys. They never got to work during the preseason. They never really understood any of those things. And now Aaron doesn't know where the guys are going to be. They don't know what he's doing. And so, yeah, he's frustrated.
Well, he's both frustrated and he shows it. He demonstrates it every moment of the game.
Yeah, he's not supposed to.
It'd be hard for me if I was on that team to want to play for that guy, just in terms of his demeanor. You know, it doesn't look like they're even having fun. So I think there's a problem, and to be honest with you, I think the core of the problem is probably Aaron Rodgers, just in the fact that I think they've built an offense around him. You know, they've got these running backs, and they've got the capacity to run, and yet every, you know, last game they ran a lot. This time, what the heck? Here it was a close game. It's not like they had to throw to score lots of touchdowns. Nobody was scoring much of anything. I mean, you can't criticize a defense that holds the other side to 15 points.
Especially with three turnovers, right?
Yeah.
So 15 points and three turnovers, the defense did their job. But you are right. Aaron Rodgers looks like a sullen guy. Right? I mean, he's frustrated at every turn. He's on the sideline complaining, cursing, slamming phones. And the other part of it is, Sandy, he and LaFleur, are not on the same page.
Well, I get the feeling, I think that the front office, that Rodgers leaned on everyone so heavily last year and suggested that he had to be a part of the decision-making of Gutekunst. He also said, I think I have to be a part of the decision-making during the game. When I see them talking on the sideline, it looks as much like LaFleur is asking Rodgers what the next play ought to be as Rodgers might be asking LaFleur what the next play ought to be. I just think that the front office has given LaFleur a very difficult situation by holding on to Rodgers and giving him a great deal of sway in the overall organization. So we end up with a quarterback kind of calling the shots, and this it's a quarterback who thinks that he has to pass into the end zone and go, he's got to throw the long ball. Most of the passing, I mean, I realize that with the receivers we have, they're going to be well covered. Just off the line, off the line of scrimmage.
They can't get open.
It's hard for them to get any separation in the short game, although the tight ends were doing all right. Guerrero was catching balls.
Right.
Tanyan could be catching balls, I think. So I just think they've got it screwed up, and I'm not sure they can resurrect themselves in the current Rodgers administration.
I think Sandy, that Rodgers now and even the coach, you just mentioned his name.
Matt LaFleur
is now at a point where I don't think they have to listen to what Aaron is saying now. Aaron has to understand now that he's kind of abdicated that freedom they gave him early on, right? I mean, they're 3-6 now.
Yeah.
So it's at the time and at the point where the management has to overrule, right? This is it. This play is what we call, you've been doing, we've given you the liberties to change all these plays at a whim. Okay, now we want you to more or less trust us in what we're doing. And I don't think Aaron has any choice, Sandy, right now at 3-6, but to abdicate, the leeway that they gave him.
Well, maybe, but I'm just mystified by the end of that game where he threw it into the end zone on four downs when they were on about the 15. They could have made a first down, and they had about a minute left, plenty of time.
You're right.
With timeouts. I mean, it was screwy. It was a screwy ending to a game. And it was a game in which they had been offensively impotent, and they remained so right through to the end.
Well, you know, they've got their toughest schedule. Part of the schedule coming up, three really strong football teams. And so they could very easily be 3-9. And I don't know if you wait to that point, the conversation begins, do we keep Rodgers out there? But when you're paying the guy $50 million, right, you don't care whether it's, you want to see the guy. The guy's going to earn his $50 million, not sitting on the bench, right?
Maybe you ask him to do some running with the ball.
Yeah, well, he said he's going to do a little bit more of that.
No, I mean, maybe that sits him down finally. You know, it's like, oh, that's too bad. Aaron sprained his ankle.
All of it, you can't predict the NFL anymore. Because their teams, Buffalo lost yesterday to the New York Jets.
I mean, the only hope the Packers have to make the playoffs is just that very fact that there are some teams, for instance, some of these teams who've had such great winning records are kind of iffy. If you look at the Vikings record, they've won a bunch of games, but they've...
Just barely. Pulling them out.
Yeah. And so, who knows? Maybe the odds will catch up with them and they'll lose four games.
Packers aren't making the playoffs, Sandy. Listen. They're 3-6. They got three.
I mean, there isn't a Santa Claus.
There's not a snowball's chance in hell. These next three games, Dallas and Dallas.
Oh, we got to beat Mike McCarthy for God's sake.
Well, it'll be poetic justice finally for Mike McCarthy. That poor soul was mistreated.
Mike McCarthy?
Yeah.
Oh.
In the end, you don't think they sell him down the river.
I think if there was ever a coach that was became predictable, who knows? I'm not an anti-coach fan, and I happen to be a pro. I think Matt LaFleur's a really good coach. Yeah. I think the last three seasons he did very well. But, yeah, I think Mike McCarthy was not the kind of, you know, he was a very predictable kind of a coach. You know, the Cowboys are doing well this year, but they've got one heck of a lineup. I mean, their team is very solid.
Jimmy Johnson, how about them Cowboys? Well, how about them Bucks?
To me, that's let's just turn our focus to let's get go to a happy place.
So Sandy, I'm watching the other NBA teams, and I'm watching the Bucks. And all of those great NBA teams that we saw over the last few years, the Jazz, Denver, Golden State, you know, there was a whole group of just top-tier NBA basketball teams. All the rest of them have kind of regressed.
Yeah, but I think also though some of those top-tier teams with top-tier guys, you can see them having chemistry problems.
Yeah, that's...
They end up with chemistry problems with the top-tier guys. They get a couple of top-tier guys in the same team, and the chemistry breaks down. I do think the magic of the Bucks is that Budenholzer is, and the front office has been is very careful about the people they keep on the team, the people they rotate through the team. I think lots of the reasons for the people that we see that come through and don't stay involves that whole chemistry issue. And I think to his credit, to his great credit, I think that Giannis Antetokounmpo, at least currently, shows a great deal of he's got his good character, I think, has legs. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be solidly humble throughout most of his career, hopefully all of it. And I think that's helping the Bucks a lot. But I also think people like Connaughton, who's now on the bench, and others, and I think I just think that they're very careful about their team and about team chemistry and character. And character ends up mattering in the long term in terms of keeping a team spot.
You can kind of see that they all get along, they all like each other. And I think, as you stated, at the root of it is the fact that they know, hey, we're playing with a guy who is, look, you can say whatever it is you want to say about him. Not only does he play harder than anybody in the game, but his ego is not, you know, risen to the point where it's all about me.
Yeah.
You know, and so they are a great team, and you know, I can see where people can say that they're the favorite. Gotta go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, let's have at it. Tomorrow is Election Day. It's finally here. You know, there's been contentious, you know, debates. Midterm elections for a long time, Sandy, but I don't know if any as contentious as this one. And, you know, you got people who are going to be at these polls, their threats that have been made to poll workers. I mean, threats being made to poll workers. So, Sandy, what it says to me is that something is so insidious with one side of this.
Yeah.
I mean, we can say what, people can say whatever it is they want to say, Sandy, but the truth of the matter is I have yet to hear any Democrats making threats to poll watchers. I mean, well, I think there's something wrong, Sandy, to for people to threaten people who work at polls. And I don't know what the government can do about that, but it's a precedent, Sandy, that I don't think you can ever go back on.
Well, I think it gets back to what you were saying, that what maybe it was a week ago, or you pointed out that the pollsters had said that 80% of the members polled from each of the parties thought that if the other party got in control,
the world would ruin America.
It would tear America apart. And I think people believe that, and as a result of that, the sort of the ends justify the means. I mean, if you're involved in essentially a militia defense of the system that you believe in, and you think it's under assault by the other side, then anything that the other side that might favor the other side gets into you. It's like warfare, and that's what's going on now. When you start threatening poll workers because you think they might be somehow subordinate to the other side, just because maybe they come from a liberal neighborhood, or I don't know how you did make these decisions, it's tantamount to the declaration of war. Civil war between the factions in the country, and I fear that's where we're at. You know, I think that this factionalization of the country, it used to be that politics in the 70s was kind of like in the old New York City when they had the Giants and the Dodgers. They were both National League teams, and you were either a Giant fan or a Dodger right. fan, and you could easily go to bars together and get along, and you could debate who was better, but it was a friendly It was a friendly situation, and that's the way politics used to be. You used to be able to debate politics with your friends, and you had friends that were Republicans or friends that were Democrats, and that's the way it was. That isn't the way it is today, and it's because the parties have come to represent groups who fear the other side so much that they think that they have to elect members of their party just to defend it against the onslaught that is going to be created by the other side. So that, for instance, particularly on the Republican side, their belief is that if they get control, they being the Democrats, they will ruin America, and we must elect ours in order to defend America against this hidden, this embedded danger of the liberals, the elite liberals who are going to tear this country apart. And because the people believe that, we have a terrible situation. The left similarly feels like the right is this autocratic, this group that wants to install autocracy, that wants to install a racial nationalist kind of a government in place. And, you know, there are kernels of truth about both of these. Enough so that people believe them and are willing to go to war over them. They're willing to break windows in, and they're willing to threaten poll workers, and they're willing to do any and all things. They're willing to assault the Capitol on January 6th. And my fear is that this election is going to set the table for an actual the process of the government machinery being put in place to actually carry this out, so that if Republicans get supermajorities in Wisconsin and other states, they can now enact all of the voter restriction laws they want to enact. Secretaries of state can be elected who will be willing to channel the power of their office in the direction of not following the obvious result of the polls and the votes in their states, but could do exactly what Donald Trump was asking them to do in 2020, which is to ignore the results of the election and to certify some other candidate based on the unilateral power that the office might constitutionally hold.
You know, Sandy, but the one side has a militia. And so whatever the Democrats are saying, they're not backed by a militia that is willing, and whether or not all Republicans agree with the militia. The militia is there. It's visible. And not enough Republicans are saying, hey, militia, go away.
Well, militia. I mean, there definitely are militias. And there are people who are on an ad hoc basis organizing themselves in this revolutionary civil war kind of a manner. And that is more prevalent on the Republican side. Of course, they've dreamed up this theory of the Antifa. And they would describe Antifa as just the opposite, as the militia of the left. I won't go so far as to think that the Mitch McConnells and the organized Republicans are believing in the militia or even supporting it. But the fact is that there are grassroots movements and particularly on the right, who want to go all the way to raising arms in order to defeat the liberals and keep them from tearing the fabric of America apart.
You know, Sandy, if you just listen to the FBI, they don't think it's anything that's marginal. They think it's a real threat. And so that can't ever be minimized again when there are threats to for heaven's sake, well, poll workers.
Well, and look at what's happened to America, because you just identify the FBI.
So, hang on. We got to go to a break. Phone lines open at 844-967-2789. It's Monday. Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And before we go to the phone lines, Sandy, this is Election Day tomorrow, and there are threats all over the place. And I don't ever recall the kind of threats that have been made out in the open. Because people want to, they're voting, right? I mean, you have a right to vote for whomever it is you want to in this country. People have fought, bled, and died for that right. And now all of a sudden, because there's some people who feel like, you know, there's some shenanigans that are going to happen.
You know, the honesty, I think it's so cynical. I don't think anyone thinks there are shenanigans that are going to happen.
I think
even the people who make the accusations about voting fraud aren't really making accusations about voting fraud. They're making accusations that through the actions of the so-called liberal elite, voting has been opened up to the point where lots more people are voting who they feel shouldn't vote, because if they vote, they will tear the fabric of America apart, because the results of those the voting outcomes will then yield the election of people who will not be like them, and to me that's the sinister, horrible part about this, is the cynical nature of the rhetoric, which is about the big steal, the fraud, and the reason none of them can paint an actual fraudulent scenario, they can't paint a theory for the fraud, is that everyone knows it's a dog whistle, and the dog whistle is that too many people are voting, and when too many people vote, the rabble will take charge. You know, we're on the verge of the Democratic rabble taking control of the country, and when the rabble take control, it will fall apart. It's the old Robespierre fear.
But Sandy,
It's anti-democratic, and it's a throwback to, I suppose, the fear of the conservative landholding founders. And the landholding founders wanted to kind of figure out ways to make sure that it would only be landholders who ultimately would call the shots.
But Sandy, I think that's even worse.
Well, it is.
I think that's worse than what they are protracting and saying, that this is the fact that they don't want the majority to rule in a nation that is predicated on that and has always been predicated on that. And because they feel that way, shouldn't matter who.
Well, you know, some of the conservatives and some of the super right-wing conservatives are actually more honest about that, and they always want to cut the fine line. They say, you know, we never were a democracy. We've always been a republic. And that differentiation is the one I'm talking about. The republic is the one in which the system is set up so that the property owners have sway and more sway possibly than the headcount in the Democratic Democratic vote. And so we have this dynamic tension in our government that's built into it. And the problem is that now we've spent so long talking to ourselves about our democracy and how it is that it's one man, one vote, when in fact we have the Electoral College and we have all these things in place. And now we can see even more clearly that the way we've set up the control of voting and districting by putting it in the states creates a great deal of states' rights, which seems to, you know, this is the dogfight that we had in politics in the 50s between the states' rights states, who were interested in protecting Jim Crow and the rest of the country. And we're now back to this sort of states' rights view of things and the cynical strategy of the Republicans, which is we're going to use the powers of the state in the maximum way possible because we can see a pathway more clearly to controlling state houses. And it has been very effective. Cynically imposed, cynically carried out, publicly carried out. None of this was done in the dark of night. It was all done publicly. The Democratic Party failed to react to the need to relate to the rural United States, and that inability to draw in and to lose the rural vote has handed the state houses to the Republicans. And we're going to see after this election, if it goes the way the pollsters say it's going to go, we're going to see Republicans, in Wisconsin and in other places, holding super majorities, being able to run the state regardless of the governor's office, which is a statewide vote. We're going to see Republican state houses running the states, changing voting standards, doing all the things needed to implement the machinery that will make essentially the January 6th fiasco that we all viewed as being an entirely unlikely outcome altogether possible in 2024, where we have a Democrat who might win the supermajority in the majority of votes in the country and lose rather dramatically because of the way the votes are presented in the Electoral College.
So, Sandy, you have just pointed out the truth in all of it that no one else has explained in that manner, because it's been sanitized in what's actually taking place here. There are others who do know that that's what's happening, but never has it been explained in the open to the degree that you have just done that. And I'll tell you something. This will lead to bloodshed at some point, because nobody's going to sit back and accept that. Not on the other side of this, because this nation and what it stood for and the people who fought, bled, and died in the wars and all those things are what's at stake in this, Sandy. And they're not going to just accept it as that, even though you explained it absolutely correctly.
Well, I think just quickly, though, I think one of the reasons as well that the feelings about it will be much more aggravated and, as you said, could even rise to the level of bloodshed is that wealth has become so concentrated in this country that we have a much bigger divide between the haves and the have-nots. We have a much bigger sense of haves and have-nots in this country than we did in 1960 when we had a very big middle class with lots of people sharing on the have side, and we didn't have anywhere near the dichotomy in wealth between those who had wealth and those who didn't.
You know, Sandy, one man, one vote, all of that gets taken away with what you just explained. Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom from L.A., Gene, call back. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call.
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people are the government, and ultimately that's the way it is, and we'll show that as we have.
What are your thoughts about what Sandy just said?
Because I think I just have such a God. I don't know if I'm my own, and I'm looking at this as self-reflection, but I don't know if I am in my own political bubble, or what. But I just don't see how it is that you can actually have conversation communion with those that first call you Democrat Party, with someone that is doing nothing for we the people, and the other side wants to do everything for the corporations that paid for their campaigns. To me, I get so frustrated because I'm like, Sandy, Seriously, these are not the Eisenhower Republicans. These are not even the Ronald Reagan Republicans, for God's sakes. These are people, and maybe, and this is where he probably thinks I'm crazy, but these are people that are fascist. These are people that want to break down every fabric of our society of what we've ever had. Education, Social Security, Medicare. I'm just at a loss, and I'm like going, God, am I nuts? Because, you know, Sandy is more in the middle. I get it. But am I nuts because he's saying that we're kind of the same on both sides?
No. Tom, I don't know how I get misinterpreted. I don't think we are the same on both sides now. I think back in the 50s and 60s, we used to be, just as you said. I think now we've divided ourselves in a manner that you've described, where many of the people on the left feel exactly as you do, and many of the people on the right feel as I describe them, as being people who think that the right is going to tear the fabric of the country apart. We've got a terrible divide in the country, and I think the divide is real, and I think the people's impulses are more or less as you describe them. I don't think the right has that many people who are overtly thinking the way you ascribe the thinking to them, but they are playing the game as if they think that way, and they've bought into the notion that Republicans have to be elected because Democrats will tear the country apart. And I don't know how we get over it, but I'm not.
I believe that we're about a 70-30 country myself. I do not believe that we are a 50-50 country.
I don't think we're 50-50 either. I think what's happening, though, as I described it, is that the fact that we are fundamentally, and I think the people who describe it this way are actually accurate from the standpoint of the way the government apparatus was set up, we are essentially a republic and not a democracy. And the tools of that republic aspect of our government are being utilized in a very cynical way to make sure that even if the headcount vote is 60-40 or whatever it could be, that the tools of the republic aspect of this will be utilized in a manner that makes sure that the 40% or whatever that minority number is can be in control. And that's the horror of this thing, is that these are tools that exist. It was, in a way, the intention of the Founding Fathers, the one we've always chosen to ignore when we talk about ourselves as being a country of one person, one vote, because we've always given lip service to that. But the fact is that the Electoral College and the U.S. Senate and these other things are not an implementation of one person, one vote.
You know, Sandy, it's frightening. The way you just explain it, it's the truth, but it's still frightening because the other 60% sees that they know something is asunder, and they do know that that those who have the goal, we've always heard
make the rules,
yeah, make the rules,
yeah.
But this is America, and so the people aren't going to settle for that. And so you got.
I'm telling you right now.
Go ahead, Tom.
Right
quickly.
Right now, I'm telling you right now, the biggest issue in this country is money and politics.
We know
it
that.
It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing I guess we should be saying every day, because I'll tell you what, that's the only way we're going to get out of this thing. There's money in media, there's money in politics, there's money in sports, there's all this stuff. And it's gone to the top 1%. And they are controlling everything. Just look at Twitter right now in terms of the battle that's having with Elon Musk.
So Tom, thank you very much for the call. We got a lot of people on. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Vote.
All right. Let's go to Gene from McClare. Hey, Gene, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Great show this morning, as usual. Thank you so much for the work that you guys do. And L.A. Tom, I believe I agree with you 100%. I've been documenting the takeover of the state of Wisconsin, how they utilized radio, they utilized the religious stations. They had the same talking points from different points of view.
True.
And they pushed through all of the different changes that were really bad for our state, getting rid of our ethics board, breaking up our workers' comp and our workforce development. I watched as people lined up to speak against what Walker administration was going to do. There's been a lot of Koch brother influence, been a lot of Alec influence. And, you know, even when they couldn't even identify who put vote in the laws in the state of Wisconsin that they vote on that hurt the people?
Bradley Foundation.
Yep, and ALEC, and Koch, yeah. Group, and Tea Party, and Americans for Prosperity, and well, we got a big challenge there because they own most of the media. Thank God for you guys, because we're blessed with you. Keep up the great work, and people, vote for the kids. Vote for our children's future. Vote blue. I'm sorry to say that, but I got to say it because I've been watching this, and I'm mortified of all the lies that Ron Johnson and Michaels was able to put on the air that were fearful and demoralizing, and we got to stop this.
You know, Gene, you're in a Claire, and what Sandy said to me has sent chills down my spine, even though I kind of know and knew that that was kind of what was happening. They tried to mask it, and they've done a great job of masking it. But I think he really put it in terms that all of us can understand. So thank you for the call. We've got to go to a break. Dave from San Francisco, hang on. We'll come to you after the break. It's Monday. That's Monday. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Mondays, and that's Mondays with my good friend Sandy. And Sandy, we've been at this for a while, and your explanation, I've learned so much from you over the years, but the truth serum that you gave earlier, people didn't get a chance to hear it. I would suggest that they, turn on the podcast later on this afternoon and listen to your explanation on what is actually taking place in this country. It's election day tomorrow. And,
I think the thing that explanation points out is that the biggest strategic issue that the Democrats have facing them is the rural vote and securing the interest of the rural vote and making sure that rural voters begin to reflect on their actual self-interest rather than being swayed by the emotional issues that are being presented to them that are basically relate to crime and abortion. Those are the issues that have seemed to have swayed the rural vote in the direction of being tied to a Republican Party that does nothing to represent them in terms of their socioeconomic condition. And the Democratic Party has represented the interests of those people, but they've turned their back on them. We should spend some time analyzing the interests of those people and why it is they might be doing it. And I think it's fear. It's the fear of the city. It's the fear of crime in the city. You know, as we were saying off the air, there's this talk, a great deal of talk, that's being used in the elections across the country and here in Wisconsin about crime and crime being a serious problem, when in fact crime isn't a problem in Eau Claire. Crime isn't a problem in La Crosse. To the extent crime is a problem, it tends to be a problem in the cities, and it tends to be a problem within the inner cities, and it tends to be a problem that only seriously affects the people who dwell within the inner cities.
But they've manipulated the others. Let's do this. Let's go to Dave from San Francisco. Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, thanks, Earl, and hi, Sandy. Out here in San Francisco, the assassination attempt against Nancy Pelosi, where they hit her husband and they missed her, Derek, I cannot find a single Republican that has sent her a message of support or sympathy. Not a single Republican. And I think I've also mentioned that Wisconsin had that slate of fake electors. And the fake electors, you were just talking about crime, whether it's, locally or in the big cities or whatnot. No, it's at the top. Because if you go to the LAIlluminator.com, you'll see the full list of all of the fake electors that the Republicans tried to send to the Electoral College. 2 years ago, Andrew Hitt is the chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, or he was until 2021. Kelly Rue, alderman for DePere. Carol Bruner, vice chairman of Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, GOP. Edward Scott Grabens, chairman of the Dane County Republicans. Bill Feehan, a business manager for La Crosse and a 2012 candidate for District 32. Robert Spindell, Jr., he was a commissioner on the Wisconsin Electoral Commission. Kelly Kiernan.
Okay, so your point.
Well, I think he's listing yeah. the fake electors. That was the slate of fake electors being presented, and he's right that it was a bunch of leaders of the Republican Party who agreed to play a part of and be a, and play a role in this whole effort by the Trump wing to secure the election contrary to the votes of the people of the state of Wisconsin. It's a remarkably cynical bunch of things that are being done, but it's as if conservative kind of supercilious conservative Republican lawyers have grabbed a hold of the party and decided that they much the way Ted Cruz I think would run things, have decided to use any technical argument they can come up with to overwhelm and overcome the will of the people in order to secure the power. Yeah, and it's a horrendously cynical anti-democratic challenge that's being posed.
And not one of them has resigned. Not one of them has apologized. This is to the Electoral College.
Well, that's because they don't have any sense of shame or apology, because they think that all of these technical tools are kind of cool and neat and ought to be deployed, because they think the Founding Fathers created these tools so that they could be used in the manner that they're using them. And what's really at stake is not
the Founding Fathers didn't authorize fraud to fraud your name onto the Electoral College delegates is not something the Founding Fathers developed. That was these guys are organized crime, and they've got a propaganda campaign working through Rupert Murdoch and Sinclair Media and all of these corporate giants that are basically trying to steal the reputation of a republic. You know, whether or not we're a democratic republic or a regular republic, there's still supposed to be a social contract where we, the people, look out for each other instead of just having a company town where boss man runs everything.
Well, absolutely right. And what my assertion is that this use of the tools in this cynical and technical fashion will threaten their existence, in fact, because if those tools are used to bend against the will of the majority of the people, ultimately there will be a reaction to that which could destroy things. I mean, we're on a terrible collision course between those who want to install an autocracy and those who are in fear of the loss of the democracy. And at some point, that kind of a fragmentation creates a serious collapse, you know, and in most places that collapse gets followed on by something that's really quite terrible.
So listen, Dave, from San Francisco, yep. Can we get you to call back after the break?
Oh, sure.
Okay, because I want to, and Dave from Mequon, Dave, you call too. I want us to continue this conversation with Sandy on the other side. This is such a one of those moments in history that I think is going to be talked about and written about decades from now. And this will be a turning point.
Yeah, I think
in our nation's history.
I think Barack Obama is right that in essence, our democracy in its current form is on the ballot, because the forces that are at play here could have a huge impact going forward that would be looked at in retrospect by historians as very important.
So both Dave's call back after the break. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. You know, Sandy, I mean, you just...